Show as always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. Our phone lines are open again at 844-967-2789. Text us at the same number. You know, Lindsey Graham said this past weekend. He ominously warned Sunday of riots in the streets if the former president is hit with charges for taking classified documents to his Mar-a-Lago home when he moved out of the White House. Now, let's just for a second. What did he do? They didn't just come to his house and break in his house because they don't like Donald Trump.
Well, here's what I would say about all of this. Donald Trump is being investigated to see if he committed crimes. He hasn't been charged with crimes yet. He's had a subpoena issued against him
that he ignored.
And now they had a warrant to go in and get it. So, yeah, you know, so far, the wheels of justice are simply moving. They haven't, that nothing has happened yet. So, you know, normally the reaction to this would be, let's see what happens. If there was an investigation of someone else like this, I'm sure that Lindsey would be saying, well, let's see what happens. It's just the wheels of justice. But no, he's fanning the flames. He's blowing the dog whistle. He's trying to use political theater to scare off an investigatory process. It's what someone does if they have the power to try and back down an investigation that might actually implicate them. I don't believe that if what they find is that Donald Trump took some trivial documents that were nominally declared to be classified, if that's all they find, I think you can rest assured they will not charge Donald Trump. He'll get some kind of slap on the hands. There'll be a report that says this can't happen again, whatever. But so, you know, the wheels of justice are usually in this country work pretty well, you know, at least with white people. You know, I think that what Lindsey Graham is doing is the kind of negative leadership. It's the fanning the flames of fear. It's legitimizing the fearful reactions. It's legitimizing the anti-government notion that's out there right now. And the anti-government notion is this notion that a left-wing government, it could be a police state that would be brought to bear against people who are right-thinking. And by right thinking, I don't mean conservatively right thinking. It's the conservatives who think their thinking is right. And so, you know, just like the left thinking, people think their thinking is right. So it's a very dangerous thing. And Lindsey Graham, a leader in this country would stand up and say, shame on you, Lindsey Graham. Shame on you.
You know, Sandy, George Conway of the Lincoln Project said Donald Trump is essentially threatening the country with violence if the laws are applied to him. Donald Trump, the raid on my home, Mar-a-Lago, is one of the most egregious assaults on democracy in the history of our country. Really? In the history of our country, which is, by the way, going to places in a very bad way. It's never been seen before. If this doesn't change, unfortunately, some very bad things are going to happen.
That's the dog whistle. Okay?
I know, but Sandy, that's the igniting.
That's the call to arms. We have this, you know, fear, like I said before, is the one of the easiest emotions to touch, and it's one of the easiest emotions to then fan the flames of. I was describing to you, you know, everyone's set up a grill, tried to get the coals going. You get one red coal going in the corner of your grill, and you think, well, I've got to do more than that. You don't really have to. All you have to do is pay attention to that red coal. You blow on it, you fan it, you open up the air vents in the bottom to bring it more
oxygen.
So
you don't pour lighter fluid on all the rest of the coals.
You could even do that. You could pour lighter fluid on that coal and whoosh,
But
it goes to the whole thing. All you need is that ember, right? And you can get a real fire going. And if you pay attention to that ember, and that's what Trump has done, that's what his movement is that now doing, is paying attention to the fear ember that exists in every human being. We all have that fear ember. You just have to find it and pay attention to it and focus on it, and it will take over the fire.
So at the same time, then, what does those individual thoughts and individuals do for a democracy that is hanging in the balance?
Well, the way you do it with a grill is you close down the holes a little bit. You maybe put the cover on. You talk to it gently. You let it understand that it should not be the dominant force in there. And so you bring leadership.
But you keep your eye on it.
Yeah. Yeah, you keep your eye on it, but you pay attention to it. You provide leadership that essentially coaxes them away from that dominant fear into a bigger, broader thought of that can bring welfare and satisfaction to them. The American society, we don't have, in America, we have lost our sense of community, the value of community. We don't, in Europe, they have free college, the reason being that they sense the actual investment value to the community of investing in the education of everyone. Same with preschool education. And it's that loss of community that has broken us down into these fragments that can now be fearful of the broad community. I'm cowering in this corner. I don't see the benefit of everyone else in the community. All I can see is my perilous position. It's the position that the inner city blacks have been in for a long time. Everyone else has been willing to ignore it and say, what's wrong with you people? You know, we've got America, this place of great value and great opportunity, and now we've got fearful white people, and they want to take up arms.
So how does a nation respond to those fears? Because in the end, those fears can destroy the nation.
Absolutely.
Right? So there has to be, and this conversation has to be had nationally and openly in front of the American people.
Well, here's what's ironic about this. The inner city people, the blacks, have had what they're afraid of talked about but sort of ignored in action to the point of frustration, that they number only 5-6%
right.
of the country, so they're the actual...
In a majority-ruled society.
So the actual... the danger that they might pose is somewhat constrained. Now we have a whole sector of the white community that feels threatened in a variety of ways. They've had this fear thing fan for them, and what they've had fan for them is the tribalistic fear that they're going to lose some cultural value that they find fundamental, and it's being fanned on top of sort of an economic fragility, so that, quite frankly, the MAGA movement, the part that's dangerous, is not the wealthy people, not the top 1%.
Right.
1% don't pose a revolutionary danger to America. It's the
average guy.
It's the average guy that's job has been threatened by globalization, whose life is affected by modernity. There's long been a knowledge amongst historians that when technological innovation and modernity starts moving in on a culture, people become frightened and more conservative, okay? So we have a broad kind of technological revolution ongoing. It's frightening the sanctity of a lot of people's existence in society. That fear is now being fanned by the MAGA movement. Make America Great Again means turn the clock back.
I know.
Right? So, turn the clock back. Let's take modernity and move it away from us. Let's get rid of globalization. It's what's damaged you. Let's keep other cultures from getting into the country, because maybe it's those other cultures and their intrusion that might advance this problem.
But Sandy, so they're willing to throw away the entire nation, which is what we're talking about.
Right.
You know, at the same time that this is brewing inside of our shores, I was saying during the break, we've got ships over in Taiwanese waters.
Yeah, let's understand. It's called the China Sea, the South China Sea. There's a reason for why it's called the China Sea.
Yeah, because
it's in their hegemony, right? It's not called the American Sea.
And yet we have ships because there was a perceived threat to our nation with what China did with their war games in Taiwan in response to Nancy Pelosi. So our government felt threatened, and they wanted to send a message, hey, we're not going to be threatened by China. We're not going to be threatened by Russia. We're not going to be threatened by anybody. But we accept being threatened by our own citizens. Help me figure that one out, Sandy.
Well, but that's the fragility of the American system. What is the response to a spoken threat like that? Can the military be deployed in response to that? No.
Well, the National Guard has been deployed in central cities across the nation when there are these uprisings.
I understand that.
Yes, historically.
But understand that the deployment of the National Guard is a manifestation of something that would seem to us and would seem to the rest of the world like a police state. It would seem like something that would get reported to us about something that happened in the USSR.
Right.
Okay, in Hungary or in Czechoslovakia during the 1950s. It's our government is dependent on a broad portion of the population honoring the norms of our society.
Which is breaking down in this instance.
It's breaking down. And Donald Trump, clearly, everyone, even the people who support him, even the one top 1% who are more maybe thoughtful and smart, who supported him, would laugh and say, well, yeah, he just flaunted the norms. Okay, flaunting the norms is, in fact, a dangerous thing to do when a country like ours is so premised on the norms. Everyone pays their taxes without having the police show up to pay their taxes. Everyone basically walks across the street at the crosswalk. You know, that's a norm. These are all things that are norms. If everyone starts violating the norms, there's no way to enforce it without our government becoming a much more like a government that we would point at and say that's authoritarian, that's a police state.
So, Sandy, I will say this. While we are spending all this money right now in Ukraine, and our government is continuing to talk about the injustice of what took place with Russia invading Ukraine, and yet our nation feels as if we have to right that wrong. I think at the same time we're willing to do that and then overlook. I don't think our government can overlook this, Sandy. It's what I'm saying to you.
Well, I mean, if we had a government that people looked at and said, we find comfort from our government, if our government provided child daycare, if it provided health care, if it provided education all the way up through college or trade school, as is done in most of Europe, we'd find that the people of our country had a much stronger positive affinity for the government, and they would understand that the community they live in is important to them because it provides them such protective comfort and value. But we haven't done that. In America, we've said everyone's for themselves, each man
right.
for himself, okay? When each man is for himself, this whole sense of community never is nurtured, and it doesn't exist.
You know, Sandy, that is without question at the root of what we're talking about. We've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789 is Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. We'll be right back. call. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. For all of you who have been trying to get through, for whatever reason, the phone lines have been down. We're working on it right now, so bear with us as we find out what's happening with the technical aspects of it. But, Sandy, you know, I wanted to spend a little more time with this because if you want to talk about, we can talk about the inflation. We can talk about inflation, gas prices. We can talk about all these other things. But this one really is.
Well, but, you know, when you get into it, when you get into talking about this kind of a problem, this potential that we would actually have vigilante action in the United States in response to a government action that is seen by at least a large segment of the public as being a police state kind of an action, something that justifies their violent reaction to. That gets fed as well by hardship that they're experiencing. So we're almost getting to the point of a perfect storm, a recession, jobs being, you know, shrinkage of jobs, prices increasing kind of unbearably. No matter what, the public has a tendency to blame the government for inflation because you got to blame someone for this hardship, so you blame the government. So the more that the government becomes the focus of antipathy, the more likely it is that we get this kind of a problem. So my concern is that we're getting to the point of something like a perfect storm. We're getting government leaders like Lindsey Graham, I mean, national figures, talking about how if you do this, if you exercise the power of government against this guy, Donald Trump, you know, the people are going to rise up against you.
You know, and Sandy, that's the part of it that gives me heartburn because, again, it's if there's some righteous person who has, you know, has done all the right things and really is concerned about the betterment of the nation. But we know who this guy is. We know who Donald Trump is, right? I mean, there's no, I'm not saying because.
Well, see, without preordaining, you know, we have feelings about Donald Trump. We understand who he is, but they're for a number of people, and it is tens of millions of people. He is, in some respects, a messiah. He's a figure who represents to them someone who needed to come along.
Hey, Hitler was a messiah.
I understand that.
Right.
And he represented to a number of people in Germany the person who had to come along to solve these problems that resided in the fear side of their psyche, and he stroked that fear and he developed a strong following, and that's what Donald Trump has done. So we have to recognize that. So instead of taking this issue on by immediately vilifying Donald Trump and saying the guy's obviously has committed crimes and he needs to be held. He needs to be held accountable for his crimes. What we need to be saying is Donald Trump is being investigated to see if he committed crimes, and we'll find out when the investigation is through what it is that the government apparatus has decided to hold him accountable for. Now, he, I believe, is going to be given a very long leash because of this political theater, because of the potential that exists for his tens of millions of followers. He has already strained and frayed the rule of law in the United States and made it much more difficult to apply it even-handedly. But it hasn't been applied
well,
to
him
yet. Well,
so, Sandy, then let's stop talking about democracy. Okay, there's no way you can talk about democracy in a manner, where we have this love affair with it if you're going to throw it out the window for one guy.
Well, the fragility of our democracy is the reason potentially why the 1.3 billion people of China are ruled in a government that doesn't have our level of democracy accorded it, right? Because apparently our level of democracy, if it's mishandled or it gets unwieldy or it gets difficult, can get to the edge of anarchy pretty quickly. And we're, quite frankly, approaching this edge of anarchy. You know, that's what social revolution turns into, is a vacuum of government. And so that's what happened in Russia. I mean, Russia misspent its money. It spent too much money on its defense. What does that sound like? A defense budget that was too big. It didn't provide enough comfort to the people as it was being promised, and the government, the federal government of the USSR, evaporated. And what was left was the major part of it, the Russian Federation, and then its fragmented republics that split off. Well, what would happen to the United States if that happened? We'd break up into 50 pieces without a dominant remaining piece. China is a huge piece, and maybe it sees a different reality, much like India. I think that's the reason why our approach to foreign policy, which is to suggest that everyone else in the world ought to rule themselves the way America rules themselves, is folly. And I think all of those people who we are talking like that to can point at our current circumstance and say, you want us to rule ourselves like that?
You know, Sandy, I'm not at the end of my conversation with you on this, and we're going to keep moving.
It's pretty easy to tie it into everything else.
Well, yeah.
Because everything is kind of tied together. Yeah. And the folly and hypocrisy of what we do in so many ways and so many places, including in our own domestic policy, Lindsey Graham is a lesson in hypocrisy. This person who is a U.S. senator, supposedly a national leader, and he stands up and warns the federal government that if you pursue the rule of law against Donald Trump, you'll have hell to pay in a social revolution of armed people.
We've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We're working on the phone lines, I guarantee you. It's Monday. It's Mondays with Sandy Williams on the Earl Ingram Show. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. You text us at that same number. You know, we're talking about, you know, where the nation is right now. And we can talk about all the other things, Sandy. But this is a turning point in our nation. And let me do this before we go back. The National Archives and Records Administration has become yet another target of threats. In the wake of attacks by former President Donald Trump after the FBI seized government documents from his Mar-a-Lago residence, sources have told the Washington Post, after Trump unleashed a torrent of invective against an agency widely viewed as librarian-like and apolitical, police increased patrols around the National Archives building in Washington, D.C. due to troubling spike in online chatter about the facility. It was the National Archives that ultimately set in motion the FBI search of Mar-a-Lago when it alerted the Department of Justice last year about concerns that Trump had not turned over all White House documents to the agency at the end of his term as president. So they're the ones who said, hey, we don't have the paperwork that we normally get when presidents, leave. Had nothing to do with Trump personally. This is what they receive every time. And let me one more. Earlier this month, the FBI seized several boxes of material stashed at Mar-a-Lago. Trump later ranted in an attack on the NARA that all anyone had to do was simply ask for the documents. But communications, including the affidavit, supported the search revealed U.S. officials have been attempting since last year. Last thing. Not only were several boxes of documents recovered, but officials noted in the affidavit that the records, including highly sensitive national security information, were haphazardly stored. Now, so in response, the NRA has received death messages from the public accusing us of corruption and conspiring against the former president, or congratulating NARA for bringing him down. Steedwell Wall wrote in an agency-wide message obtained by the Post, Trump has threatened treated the documents as his personal property, though under the Presidential Records Act, they belong to the American people. But those people are being threatened now. Their lives are being threatened. Sandy, come on.
Well, yeah, like I said,
those are Americans too, right?
Sure, no,
doing their jobs.
Well, it's Americans who are symbolic to some people of the federal government,
right?
The government is basically implemented through people, and so suddenly now the record archive portion of the American government is under threat because they seem to be manifesting the government vis-a-vis Donald Trump.
Yeah, the people who worked there.
That article talked about how what was in the documents that... So the archive said, hey, there's a bunch of documents Donald Trump had. We should get them. And that was a year and a half ago, pretty much right after in May or June of last year. And so they did get a bunch of documents. And when they looked through those documents, they found that haphazardly within those documents were some really sensitive documents, and that Donald Trump had just taken them. So they said, hey, you know what? There's some pretty sensitive stuff, and we didn't get everything. There's still more stuff there. So that's the FBI began to investigate that, and that's when apparently they decided that there could be some truly sensitive stuff that might actually be reflective of something nefarious. So now they're pursuing that investigation. Now, without prejudging it, they're pursuing an investigation. And what has happened as a result of what the leadership or non-leadership that's being provided in Washington is, the American public is dividing itself up right now during an investigation with respect to who's being investigated and who's doing the investigation. I mean, the American Republic can't live like that. You know, the rule of law has to be implemented through investigations. What we need to do to accord the rule of law its proper due is to see what the result is of the investigation. Then we can stand back and judge it. You know, half of the problem with respect to the Black Lives Matter movement was that when people stood back and looked at the result of the rule of law, they got up in arms about it, okay? That's a completely different thing than what's happening right now when people are getting up in arms about the fact that an investigation is ongoing. And, you know, I can see Watergate. Watergate was a truly profound historic moment. Richard Nixon, a sitting president, ended up resigning. Never once during that period did Richard Nixon or any of the Republican leaders put out a dog whistle call to the right to conservatives or Republicans to stand up against the government. It never even was talked about. And Richard Nixon resigned rather than breaking the government asunder. So he had some level he felt some level of responsibility and obligation at that point to sort of do that thing. And he also backed off from government, kept his mouth shut, didn't run an opposition government when he got out of office. And so that was a period when the rule of law and the norms of the rule of law were basically accorded. The crimes that were involved with Watergate probably would have been called, in today's world, trivial political mischief. Because what happened was, the break-in at Watergate was basically a criminal but political mischief-driven attempt by the Democrats to get in and look at, I mean, the Republicans to get in and look at Democratic political stuff.
You know, Sandy, the rule of law is at the root of what the nation is, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if there is no rule of law and that's being usurped, then we have no nation. There is no constitution. There is no Bill of Rights.
Without a rule of law, you end up in a sea of corruption. You end up in a vacuum. I mean, the problem that Russia has had moving from the USSR status into the kind of greatness that a country of its geographic magnitude could have, as well as its broad education. I mean, it's got all, it's the platform, it has a platform to be every bit as good as the United States in terms of what it could achieve. But what it has lacked is the rule of law. And it has lacked the uniform application of the rule of law, and it has always been a place of great corruption. And that has been the impediment that has stood in the way for the Russian people of getting where they need to get. We look at those places and shake our head, and here we are in America with a large movement now making a broadside attack on the rule of law.
And the rule of law is backed and enforced by our military. There's got to be something, Sandy, that will back that rule of law.
It's enforced by our court system, and it's enforced by the norm we have in our society that we abide by the decisions of the court system, and our courts apply law in a even-handed enough way. Whether it be absolutely even-handed is clearly a question. It's been even-handed enough so that there have not been popular uprisings against the rule of law as applied. So we haven't had to apply a formal police process of the federal government, other than the circumstance of, for instance, integrating the university in Mississippi,
right,
or several circumstances where the National Guard has been employed to impose the rule of law. But fundamentally, it's imposed out of the norm that exists in our society. We don't have many policemen showing up. You know, the times when the police show up and make an arrest
is
reported in the paper, because people respond to warrants in this country. There's a general compliance with the law.
You know, Sandy, I just, all of what is transpiring here takes me back to as a young boy in this country and learning about all those different things at a time of the unrest that was taking place. And I can only see it through the prism of those years and how our government handled that. And now looking at where we are now and the fact that we have to understand why people are threatened. And I thought that any time you threaten the United States government, you know, who term is always, we the people out of government, right? We the people out of government. Mm-hmm. We the people. So what are we doing, threatening ourselves?
Well, we're making a threat. Lindsey Graham is doing something much more than he understands.
Do you think he made a threat?
Absolutely. His words were a dog whistle.
Is that treason?
Well, that's the problem with the rule of law is that it requires, for instance, criminal conduct requires that there be an intent, that the conduct be directly connected to the outcome of the criminal outcome, and it's why Trump's speech on January 6th. Will probably never be the basis of a criminal complaint against him, because it's a bunch of speech, and it's hard to prove simply because of that speech that a bunch of people went off and committed crimes. So what the investigation of January 6th needs to focus on is everything that went on behind the scenes related to January 6th in addition to that speech, because speech is protected and the...
Some speech is protected, like you said.
Yeah, fire
in... So what's different between that and what Trump and Lindsey Graham did?
Well, the fire in a movie theater, then people get up and run immediately, and they did it in response to the call for fire. It's very clear and apparent.
Okay.
And so it's the clear and apparent connection that has to be made, and that's where things get foggy, because you have to be able to persuade a jury that it is beyond any reasonable doubt, okay? Which means no juror can believe that or disbelieve the accusation. And that's a difficult, happily in the United States, we have this high burden of proof associated with crime so that everyone can't just be willy-nilly hauled into a court and charged the way they used to be in old England.
You know, Sandy, if you don't mind, I still got a lot more to.
No, I don't.
Because I really just want the American people to really understand this, and not, you know, business as usual, you know, because I believe we're that close, and when our government has to walk on eggshells with any one person, I thought the government was and law was bigger than any one person. You know, I thought that, you know, justice is blind, the scales, you know, are balanced, and all those things that law stands for.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have to understand, like in Watergate, so there was this criminal mischief that occurred with this break-in at Watergate by the Republican, these guys who were working on behalf of Nixon, at least, to break in. And in today's world, it would be viewed as criminal vandalism or criminal mischief. It was definitely a theft. It was a crime. But the crimes that Nixon committed that got him actually to the position where he had to resign was the cover-up that he then carried out to try and make it hard for prosecutors to prosecute that Watergate break-in case. And so it was all just the kind of stuff that we're talking about now with Trump. It's covering up the ability to investigate a crime that got a President Nixon all the way to the point of resignation, or he would have been impeached by a Congress that was acting responsibly. The American political process has gotten so far off track that we don't have people today. If Nixon came along today, he would not have been impeached and he would not have had to resign.
Listen, we've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We're still working on the phones, but Sandy and I are going to keep plugging away. It's Monday, Mondays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back. Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. If you can text us at the same number as Monday, that means Mondays with Sandy Williams. And if you've been trying to get in, our phone lines are now working. Again, 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. You know, Sandy, this is a turning point. And there's always turning points in the nation's history. But where we are right now, and
well, to be honest with you, I think it's more like we're driving a car very rapidly on a very precipitous on a highway on a mountain that has very precipitous sides, and we are in peril of going over the side. And unless we get a grip on the wheel, and unless we straighten things out, this car is going to go over the side of the cliff. And it's not, you know, because the problem that we're talking about is not just a problem of, for instance, the burning in some cities that's caused by the Black Lives Movement. No, this is a much, much bigger problem, and it's perilous to the country. And unless we get a grip on it, and unless we figure out, unless we get some leadership that kind of gets this thing going in a much more cohesive direction, unless we can invigorate in the United States a sense of community that could draw us together instead of dividing us, unless we stop fanning the flames of fear the way we are, fanning those flames of fear threatens to make this whole bunch of coals burn brightly and hot and red. And, you know, at the end of that, all you have is ashes.
So, Sandy,
right? I mean, the end result of a really great coal fire is ashes.
So in this issue, it's not black and white. It's Democrat, Republican.
It's us versus them,
yes,
in a way that's hard to understand exactly, but it's probably in a way us versus them that people would describe themselves as conservative patriots and liberal un-American.
Well, it's the Hatfields and the McCoys.
Yeah.
But it's that kind of hatred.
Well, it's protectors of America against the threats to America based upon a definition of America that's very peculiar to restricted to those people who think they're protecting it. And
yeah.
And the basis for their definition of America and patriotism is a very biased one, which is subject to should be examined, and it should be the basis for leadership to get people to think of a broader definition.
So my response to that would be, then the other side, if they took that same strident point of view, those conservatives.
Mm-hmm.
And now the other side, the liberals, took the same point of view and willing to take up arms and burn it down. If the liberals took that same point of view, this would have happened by now.
Well,
so this is why I'm saying it's hard to say, okay, I understand those people's point of view. When the liberals at times have had similar things happen, and they didn't do the same thing.
Well, the progressive movement for quite a while was talking about the need for essentially a social revolution.
Right, but not armed.
Well, but the question is, how is a social revolution implemented, and how does that get carried out? And the talk of social revolution by a bunch of people who by the conservatives were labeled as socialists.
Right.
Became a basis for discussion on the right that created some of this us versus them tearing at the fabric of America by un-Americans, et cetera. I think we can step back a little and look at the travesty that happened to Colin Kaepernick. Okay.
Oh, no question.
A guy who, when you get into it and examine who he was fundamentally as a person, was kind of an outstanding, outstanding good person,
right,
who was
helped us the people
very,
in the country.
Very, very good at what he did. He killed the Packers twice in playoff games and took San Francisco to the Super Bowl, and yet he was barred and vilified.
His career was destroyed.
American privilege. Yeah. He was destroyed in the same manner that the conservatives worry about being destroyed in America by a system which is going to tear at the character of what they think is America. America and the character they're describing destroyed Colin Kaepernick. And so I just think we need to be aware that he represents, in some respects, a canary in the coal mine as to what could happen to American culture.
You know, Sandy, then it takes, there's an even deeper divide, and we're going to talk about that, you know, after the break, and it's in keeping with everything we're talking about. I mean, you got Ron Johnson, who's basically condemning Mandela Barnes for some of the things that he said and calling him un-American and, you know, and we're better Americans than you. I'm a better American than you because these are my views. And so there's no way you can vote for a guy like that because he doesn't represent what America stands for. And my thing is, What are you talking about? This continued divide about who's an American, you know, who's got naming rights, you know, to the nation and ownership of the nation.
Who can wear the flag on their lapel?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I remember when Barack Obama first ran for office and they were crucifying him because he didn't have a flag pin on his lapel. You know, and somehow wearing a flag pin on your lapel meant that you were, you know, more American than somebody else. And so at the root of all of these things, Sandy, I still believe is the fact that we got to stop trying to define people and what makes them a stronger American than somebody else. What's supposed to make America different and better than all these other nations is our tolerance for all these other things.
Well, and defining Americans and this whole wrapping arms around and owning patriotism is really tribalism. Okay,
right.
Are you in the tribe or are you not in the tribe? If you're in the tribe, you're a patriot and American. If you're not in our tribe, you're not. And now the question is, What are the ingredients? What are the qualifying characteristics?
I can't be in that tribe because I'm not from the same ethnic background. Does that make me less of an American?
I fear that it does.
Yeah. Well, that's and the reason I love having you on is because you're so honest about what's going on in the country, Sandy, and that's what we need. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. Can't stop me.